Okay, thank you for texting in your questions. We will try and get through as many as possible in our allotted time. Please don't be offended if your question doesn't come up. And thank you for our willing panel who are going to be grilled with questions. I will try on some occasions to ask specific ones to specific people, but please also jump in if you think, actually, I've got a comment to make on that. So we have our first question, please. Got Russ at the back feeding the questions through. Hopefully. Oh, okay. How do you balance your business, family, and church life? David, I'm going to start with you on that.
I think you have to ask my wife for that one. The theory is it's the other way around. So the theory is church first, then family, then business. Now, it's not always that simple. And when I mean church, I mean basically your relationship with God. So that has to be, first and foremost, the thing that drives you, the thing that powers you. It's your intel inside. Sorry to use a kind of brand term. Then if you're married, your partner, so you, in my case, my wife, then my children, and then me, actually, the kind of the one that's missing in there, and then my career. Now, if anybody knows Avni, my wonderful wife, she'll know that you'll know that she isn't backwards in coming forwards when I don't get that balance quite right. But that's my ambition, and I always try and deliver it in that order. But sometimes work prevails, it kind of takes over, and you know, needs must on occasion. The key thing is you need a barometer. A good wife to tell you when you need to kind of kick back into the right order. So I'm very lucky personally to have a wonderful wife that does that, but also a very understanding one as well that understands that on occasion, you know, that the balance is shifted.
Thank you. I'm going to ask James. I'm guessing James is busy.
Oh, you've got a.
Okay.
I agree. It's a tricky one, and I can only speak from my experience. I work with my wife and have two children, and we not only both work, but we work together, and that's sort of could potentially be a recipe for disaster. You know, people talk about taking work home to bed with you. We've definitely had a few business conversations late at night. It's hard, but on the flip side, for us, at times being an entrepreneur running our own business has actually been quite helpful. It means that if our children are sick or we're needed in other areas, we can do it. I go to St. Peter's. I'm very involved in leading the building project there. I'm able to drop out as and when. So there's huge advantages as well to running a business and being your own boss. So that's what I would say.
Nearly sorted with it. Can we have the next question, please? Right, so it's, are you saying that Christians have an exclusive claim in morality and integrity? And Joel, that's coming to you.
One-word answer. The one-word answer would be no. The evidence is before us all the time, in as much as there are Christians who have, or ostensibly Christians in the business sector, who are a terrible advertisement for Christian ethics, and just as there are those who don't have any kind of faith or have a faith quite different than Christianity, who are apparently far more exemplary in their integrity and morality. So, I mean, just judging by the bare-faced evidence that we encounter week by week, you'd have to say the answer is no. I would say a couple of things. I'd say, in response, however, I would say I think that the basis, if we're talking about living by a code of ethics and holding to that code with integrity, certainly that's that comes through in all kind in loads of cases, whether you're a Christian or not. But having a basis for them, I think, is very tricky without without actually accepting the idea of a what a philosopher would call an ontology, something that exists beyond simply the experiences that we have in the here and now, beyond what we can taste, touch, smell, you know, our five senses. If we say morality is very important to me, but I don't have any basis for it, I don't know why, it just is important, it feels better to live this way, we are left with huge questions. Why does it feel better? Why should it feel better? And why should anyone take any notice of what feels better to you? For some people, it feels better to do it this way. For others, it feels better to do it this way. There's a famous interaction between the atheist philosopher Bertrand Russell and the Christian philosopher Francis Copleston, where Copleston pushed Russell on this and said, on what basis do you judge morality? And ultimately he said, on the basis of preference. And what another philosopher, or another Christian philosopher, wrote years later, saying it would have been a good way to answer if Copleston had said, some tribes in the world prefer to do good to their enemies, other tribes of the world prefer to eat their enemies. Do you have a preference? And because if you sort of boil it down simply to preference, then it's very hard to hold to that consistently. You are left with enormous questions, enormous philosophical questions. I'm not saying, though, that people can't just sort of put those questions aside. People do. I think everybody does to some extent. We put the questions aside and get on with life. And lots of people are brilliant at doing that and are much nicer people probably than I am. So to answer the question practically, I'd say absolutely not. Christians don't have a monopoly on this. But I do think there's a consistent worldview issue that's very important for people to simply face and grapple with. I think also the other thing to say is that when it comes to moral decisions, Julia's seminar up here was brilliant, and I'm not saying yours wasn't as well, Dave, but Julia's was better. But it was no, I wasn't at Dave, so I've heard it was brilliant too. But she was doing a good job of kind of teasing out some of the ethical dilemmas that we face in the business world, which are fascinating and worth wrestling with. I think the thing that one has to come back to is you sort of realise sometimes people will come to quite the same decision in terms of what makes the right decision ethically, but Jesus always went much further beyond or deeper below that. So people can behave the same way as each other ethically. But Jesus was never satisfied with simply what's on the outside. He's always talking about the heart. Always. Always, 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 always. And as Christians, we must make sure that we're not only talking to people about their behavior, their ethical behavior, what they do in the marketplace, this is unethical, that's unethical, or even that's legal, that's illegal. Those are utterly important. No question. They're they're vitally important. But if we are... living before God means we know living before God means so much more than simply taking a certain list of rules. Jesus is one of Jesus' key message throughout all of his teaching is you can keep the law, the moral law of God, and yet be far from God. And actually, he said those who are apparently the sinners, the ones who are outcast on the edge of society, you know, classic Brightonian pagans, might be people who are closer to God. He said they are entering the kingdom before you because their hearts are more softened and broken to their need of God. And so that's a very important thing to mention when we talk about morality in any sphere, not just the business sphere. I hope that makes sense. It's a long answer, which I'm good at, and doesn't scratch all the itches, but there
Great.
You go.
That's the only one you're going to answer.
That's the only one. Yeah.
Okay, can we have next question? Okay.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
How are we doing?
I think these guys are just playing chess up there, actually. I think. Battleships.
Okay. I can slot one in if you guys are sorting one out. Okay. And it's going to be to Julia. And what was the business? What is the biggest business risk you've taken?
The biggest business risk I've taken. I'm at pains to think of that. There are probably lots of risks that I've taken. I'm quite a risk-taking sort of person. And it's interesting seeing how each of us have a different level of aversion or liking for risk. I suppose I can tell you the story of last year, a mistake I made, where my business, the joy of business, is just me. I've got a virtual assistant who does some stuff for me. I've got a few people who help me with different things, but mostly it's me. People are paying for me. So there's always a ceiling on what I can earn, which is about billable hours, and how much I can charge for that. And that's okay. I earn a decent amount of money. I have nice holidays, buy nice clothes, do the things that I want to do. But I'm a bit of a greedy cat. So last year, I decided I would set up a second business. Took somebody on, identified a gap that I thought was out there. There is a gap out there. And set up another business, which was quite different. Spent money on a beautiful website, diverted myself from the joy of business, and set up a company called Tender Winner. And I probably spent about £14,000, which is quite a lot of money for me. That's, you know, I haven't got that in loose change in my bag. And then various things happened. The person that I employed didn't work out. There were some emotional issues there. And I realised that this other business, I wasn't really that interested in and I wasn't that passionate about. I'd just done it to make money, which is fine. Lots of us do that. But I'd got this other thing called the joy of business, which I really love, find really fascinating, learn stuff from, and pays me money. And all of a sudden, that picked up enormously. Didn't have any time to spend on the new thing. So the new thing is just sitting out there. I haven't done anything with it, and I've wasted 14 grand. So that was a bit risky. Mm-hmm. And I had a few little tears over that, and thought, oh, I failed, I've made a mess of it. And then I thought, oh, well, it's just money, I might as well go out and just earn some more. So I have. And if anyone wants to buy a great business about procurement, then that's my plan for the summer, is to sell the thing.
Brilliant, thank you. I guess lots of lessons learnt in that process. So it's not failure, it's good learning experience. Exactly. Great, thank you. Have we got another? No, okay, I've got a shaking head.
We have another one, yeah. We've got technical issues, so I'm going to have to read it out.
Guys, you're doing great, thank you.
All right, Julia, we are a church which links business and our faith together. How does the Chamber of Commerce view us?
Oh, I'm not sure I've got an official policy position on that. Might have to do a survey. We're a very democratic organisation. The Chamber of Commerce is made up of hundreds of people, some of whom are Christians, some of whom are not Christians, some of whom are different religions. There's a whole bunch of different people there from different backgrounds, etc. I would say from my own point of view, initially when Mac asked me to come along, I was kind of, oh, that's a bit odd. What do they want me for? So, and then I've come along and I've met lots of people and everyone's been really nice to me. So perhaps that's changed my position and challenged me a little bit. Hasn't finished yet, yeah. Will I get out the door? So I think that the Chamber of Commerce represents everybody out there in society, including you guys, because there are some members in the audience today. And I don't think that we could have a view of this organisation, of Christianity. I don't think I could represent that. I can tell you what we think about parking policy, but that's
Please
a completely
do.
Different question.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Michael, I'd like to ask you a question. I know you've been in the PR business for many years, large company, faced many challenges. Did you ever want to give up? And if you did, why didn't you? What stopped you?
did I ever want to give up being a PR man? One of my daughters very kindly suggested a new name for my business. My business was actually called the Priory Partnership. But she said when she was about 17, Dad, what you should call yourself is, if you pay us, we're on your side. Which was very perceptive of a 17-year-old to understand my motivation at that time. I guess a more serious answer is that, yes, there are times when I think doing a job like that is hugely challenging, but there's also time when it is hugely rewarding. One of the most rewarding things I did goes back to the 1980s now, was when we were approached by the bus company, who were suffering enormously because of traffic congestion in Brighton and Hove. And we ran a huge promotional campaign to get the traffic sorted out, called Freeway. And if you look at that, all the bus lanes, which I know are not popular with motorists, but all the bus lanes and the traffic regulation that has come about in Brighton, which has enabled our then clients to run a really good bus service, came about on the back of that particular campaign. So that was hugely satisfying. There's other times when we did things which were hugely unsatisfying, or even worse, hugely unremunerative. Those are the ones that really made me unhappy. So, yeah, I never quite got to the point of wanting to give up. But sometimes we were in the sort of business, I guess there's lots of people who are, where you have to put your heart and soul into it. I mean, what my daughter said was quite right. In a way, if I was helping, I excelled, I think, and I was most motivated when I was on a crusade doing something like that, or all sorts of other things I did. You have to put your heart and soul into it. And if you do, and it then hits the bumpers, then you do feel a bit like giving up. But then, hey, the next day another client comes along with more work to do.
Brilliant. Thank you. James, what role does spirituality play in your business?
Actually, I'm really, really pleased to be asked this question, because I didn't maybe refer to it as much as I'd like to, particularly in the talk. There was a guy I went to church with a few years back who had a big trading company in London, this sort of £100 million company called Liquid Capital. And he asked me one day whether we had a kind of a spiritual board. And I was quite surprised to discover that he did. And this is just a practical thing. And so as a result of that, we put in place a bunch of friends who we specifically chose for their lack of business acumen to kind of meet with us. And we have six people who meet with us for breakfast once every 2 months. And at that meeting, we generally go through something that's on a challenge in the business. But everyone knows at that meeting also that we listen, but we also test those things afterwards. And I think it's very important. And I'd like to check with Joel on this, but I apply a sort of three sort of tests to decision making in business. The first is what's in front of you? What's the data saying? So if the question is, should I turn left or should I turn right? And on the left is a pit full of snakes, and on the right there's nothing. That's the environment, and that's what's obvious. So that's the first test. Is it obvious? The second test is, what does your kind of gut say? What do you feel inside? And the third test is the sort of what I'd call the prophetic. And I think God works in all three, but I would apply them in that order. I don't think that we should perhaps be using prophetic every day to think about every decision. And I think it's that the prophetic and business, we have to be very careful as how they're associated, how we they come together. And Joel talked about a book called Faith Is Back, and the kind of one of the conclusions of that book is power and faith have danger. And I guess that would be exemplified in a kind of big CEO going off on one and saying, God's told me this, and that not being able to be kind of questioned by the two things. So I try and apply those three things. But I have to say that I have had friends who've got in a muddle because of being called into something and people or supporters around them not questioning that calling enough, and got in a muddle with business. So I think it's a really interesting area, and one I'm happy to talk about more and think through more. I haven't totally worked out, but a challenging one.
That's very helpful. Thank you, James. It's another question for you. It's even got your name at the top of this one, which the others didn't have. Prayer has played a major factor on your business path and the help of your Christian friends. What would your staff make of that?
I think certainly all of our staff would know that we go to church, but we wouldn't invite all 150 of our staff to that meeting once every two months. That's something that happens quite outside of the business. We hope that through our business that we are good ambassadors to our staff through our works and the way that we employ people. But on a personal level, we're not public about the spiritual drivers. I can talk about it here, but I wouldn't stand up at work when we have a morning meeting and say we've been praying about something and we've decided to stop doing pies and start doing pasta or something.
Great, thank you. And we've got one more, please. Okay, how can one attract and employ the best people if you are just starting up a business? I think, Julia, I'm going to ask you that.
Yeah, you guys have some good questions. I think there are lots of things that that you can do. One of the big things that's coming out today, I think, is about how, building on from the last question as well, is about how you position your business. Good people have a choice of who to work for. So there are lots of people out there. Some people might say it's easy to go and get staff. There are lots of people out there who would like jobs. There are lots of people out there who would like a reasonably well-paid job. So I would certainly say if you want to attract good people, pay them a decent amount. But actually the research shows that paying people loads of money doesn't get you that much more benefit in terms of their commitment or even their skills or experience or what they're going to bring to your business. So money, pay them a decent amount, but that's not the main thing. If you want to attract really good people, then those people have still got a choice because the labour market is made up of people who are really good and a whole bunch of other people. There's a long tail effect, or an opposite to the long tail, actually, where there's lots of people who are kind of mediocre, and a few people who are really good. So those are the people that you want, people who care about what they're doing, people who are going to turn up on time, people who are going to think about what they're doing, people who have maybe done this before somewhere else and have developed some skills on it. And I would say make your business a place where people want to do business with you, where people want to buy whatever it is that you provide, and a place where people actually want to come and work. because it's a cool place to work, because people have fun there, because it's, we talked a lot about ethics and values before, because it's a good company. And you pointed out that people are more concerned now about the companies that they buy from. There was a survey of recent graduates 2 years ago, and all of those people, all the graduates, said that one of the biggest factors for them were the ethics and values of the company that they worked for. It's hugely important to those good people. So whether you want to be overt about that, it's faith-based or not, whether you're overt about that because you have a value that says we use good design in our business and make everything look good, that's a value for some people. Whether you want to make a value about what you give to the community, make that overt, send out a press release, put it on your website, don't be quiet about it. Make your company look really, really good. And that will save you lots of money because you won't have to pay them quite as much as just being lazy and saying, oh, we'll pay them 35 grand, 50 grand a year, and that will automatically attract people. That's a lazy way of thinking about it. Make it desirable in all of those ways.
Fantastic. Thank you. Guys?
Sorry, can I add to that? If that's okay. Sorry, guys, I don't run my own business. I work for a big corporation, so I'm not best placed to answer this, but... are you familiar with TED Talks online? Anybody kind of nodding their head? So TED Talks, if you're not, is an online forum, just Google it, of videos of inspirational speakers. If you go to that, there's a speaker called Simon Sinek. So just go into the TED Talks, search for Simon Sinek. He's got an 18-minute talk on there about why businesses do what they do. And he's basically saying... Most businesses know what they do. They all know what they do. Businesses know how they do what they do, but not that many businesses know why they do what they do. And it's been the theme of today, but basically, if you can, that's the sweet spot. If you can nail why you do what you do and really truly understand your values and your ethics, you will attract people of a like-minded kind of attitude. And as Julia said, you get that, and then people will work for peanuts. To be honest, so that's how you attract the best people, by being really clear about what you stand for and why you do what you do, and look for people that share the same vision. So I hope.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for being prepared to sit up here. If we could give them a round of applause, we're in there. Thank you. I'm going to hand you over to Matt.
All of these guys can actually go and sit down. How's that? Should we thank them? Just want to say a few thank yous, if that's okay, just as we close, and one little piece of housekeeping, and then we'll do the prize draw. You've got these brilliant lanyards. A friend of mine said to me, or in fact, I texted him during the week, I said, what do you reckon, badge holders or lanyards? And the word lanyards came back. Is lanyards equal cool? So I hope you've appreciated the lanyard feel today. And what I'd love you to do, actually, as you exit the building from the front entrance, really appreciate it if you just whip it off and leave it as you leave. Someone will collect it from you. I really appreciate that, because we've got another event next week that we'll be using these at, so I appreciate that. I just want to say a few thank yous. I want to say thank you to the tech team. Shall we say thank you to those guys? And I can't actually see my administrator, Katie, in the room, but I'd love us to applaud her anyway. She's worked sterlingly hard. And to say thank you to our speakers, Julia from the Chamber, James from Higgity, and we had Joel speaking, who leads the team here, Michael and David Thomas. Let's thank these guys again. We'd like to just take one liberty following this event. We'd like to email you to say, look, humbly submit, how can we improve what we're doing here? Has anyone got any great ideas or suggestions for how we can keep developing what we're doing here at CCK with the business community? So we'll be sending you an email in a few days' time to say, give us some feedback. come back to us. We'd love to shape things with you guys investing in what we do for the future. So thank you very much. Great. I'd like to invite Julia to pop her hand into this bowl. Nothing, don't worry. It's not a snake pit or anything. And in that little thing, there's a bottle of port. So who's going to win this? I'll give it a rustle around. That's right. No one's looking. There we go. Out it comes. There we go.
Okay. Angela Starnes.
Well done, Angie. Thank you, Julia. Thank you. Don't drink it all at once. That would be my recommendation. Great. Thanks so much for being with us. Really appreciated your time. Time is money. You're all business-minded people. I hope it's been of value to you. God bless you. Thanks very much. Cheers.